Welcome back to the Fire You Carry podcast. On today's episode, Kevin and I are joined again by Max Case. Max is a licensed marriage family therapist, a life coach, and his episode that we did with him 2 years ago is in our top 10 as far as the amount of downloads. People love it. This one is outstanding. I'm not even going to try to distill down what we talked about. There's so much here. Don't miss this one. You will get something out of it. I can guarantee that. Thank you for listening. Enjoy.
In life, pain is inevitable. But there's a greater pain, and that's the pain of regret. Right? We're going to feel pain, and we just have to deal with it gracefully. But regret is something that we have control of. You don't want to live with regrets. So the next time you have an opportunity to love, and there's something you feel yourself being pulling back, lean in, go for it. Just love boldly. Even if nothing comes back, you'll have no regrets.
Welcome back to the Fire You Carry podcast. This is a pleasure. We have back on the show, Max Case. Max, welcome back.
Thank you. I am honored to be here. It's good to see you guys in person. It really is.
Yeah, it's been 2 years.
It's been 2 years and we're excited. We've been trying to schedule this for months and we're here in person, which is why it's taken so long, because we needed to sit down in your office. It was important to us.
Max, I want to have you give us your title, but you've been a life coach to us. You've helped my wife and I personally in like marital counseling, that kind of a thing. And this is very nice to be here, because usually when I am sitting in your office, I'm in trouble with the wife. So
I know.
It's actually nice. We've been talking about fitness, and full disclosure, half the time when I'm in here with my wife, we're doing some good work, but I kind of want to just hang out with Max and talk about it. So this is a great excuse to just hang out with Max and just talk about cool stuff.
I like it. It's like being in my living room, right? We're just hanging. I got coffee. You guys got water. We're just hanging out. I love it. So
it's the way it should be.
So give us the, for people that hadn't listened to, I implore you to go back. It's episode 42. Okay. And it was one of our wildly popular shows, but tell us who you are and your title and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm a licensed marriage family therapist. I'm also a life coach, a business coach, president of New Hope Christian Counseling Foundation, co-founder of New Hope Christian Center. We're here in, we have how many offices now? Costa Mesa, Covina, Redlands, Moreno Valley, Murrieta, Hemet. So we're expanding because there's just such a great need out there, especially, you know, through COVID. It really opened up people's eyes to wanting to get help. So there's been some expansion. It's really exciting. So
that's awesome.
That's what I do.
And you've been doing this for how long?
Oh, okay. So next year, although I'm 27 years old, as you guys know,
we do know,
you do know, it'll be 40 years,
40,
40
years,
years wow. Next year.
Wow.
That's amazing. And I've seen just incredible things that when I talk to other therapists, that things they just have never seen in their career. I'm just totally blessed to have the experiences I've had.
And it doesn't seem like you're at the point, because a lot of people, if they've been doing a career for 40 years, they're looking forward to retirement and being done and kind of at that point where you're just checking the box and like, yeah, I'm showing up, but I have this retirement day. It doesn't seem like you're done.
No. Okay. Full disclosure. I also have a faith. I'm a Christian and retirement is not in the Bible.
True.
Except for the Levites, right? When they're like 50 or something like that. But no, I'm in this phase where I'm learning. I continue to learn, because here's the reality. I don't know hardly anything. I don't. The difference between where I'm at now and when I was younger was it mattered back then because there was ego. Right now, it's more about just learning, and I'm excited. I'm learning so much, and I'm still growing.
Well, tell me about that. When you say ego, were you trying to, you know, earn a living, prove yourself, be the best therapist? Like, how does it different now?
Well, ego is about that. I'll use a word. So the word person, in the Latin, it means per, which through, son, sound. And in Latin, what it used to mean was a person was the mask. It was the mask that they spoke through, the actors. So I think in life, we're always, in the beginning, we're trying to find out who are we? What is our identity, right? We're trying to seek that out. But I think as you get older and you do the work, you kind of know who you are, who you were created to be, what your gifts are, and learning to live in that flow of who you really are. It's like we're human beings, right? But most people are human. They don't understand the being. But we know those moments where we're just, where there's flow. That's the being part. So I'm living more in that. And then I get to play and form as a human. So it's just kind of an exciting time. It's just exciting. Right, and I love to learn.
So 1983, you're getting your start. That's a different time, a different era. You know, I was a kid of the 80s. And you hear these things. I was just curious about this now because you've been in the game for 40 years. There's like this softening generation after generation. Mm. You know, I'm sure you've seen differences. But in reality, is it everyone's still dealing with the same stuff as they were in 1983 as they are today? Or is it different?
Well, I think it is. I think it goes back to something we talked about in the last podcast was we all need the same things. There's only six things we need. We need certainty. We need some variety. We need to know that we're significant and we have value. We need love, connection. We need to grow. We need contribution. So we all need the same things. It just looks a little different. So society is a little bit different than it was then. You know, the generation I was working with back then, as I was getting World War II vets, Korean vets, a lot of people from coming right out of Vietnam. You know, so it's different. It's different. Different generations. But we all have the same needs. They had a need for certainty. In a time when there was great uncertainty in the 80s, right? We had the wall, you know? Mr. Gorbachev,
tear down
that wall, right? You know, we had such great uncertainty about nuclear war, right?
It's kind of there until right now.
Well, it's kind of popping up again, isn't it?
Do you find in your practice now, you started out with a lot of Vietnam veterans and a lot of World War II veterans and guys at that point. Have you been seeing a lot of veterans of the, I won't say the current wars because they're actually not going on anymore, but the global war on terror that was going on for the last 20 years. Do you see people, are those people coming in and seeking help now as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's more openness to it in current generations. So I think they're more open to, you know, to come to a counselor or even, a life coach. Absolutely. And it's good for them.
You know, one of the things that you've helped me kind of recognize is that in like even our own personal marriages that we have, you mentioned the six things and we should probably go over those again, but we have a lot of variety in the work that we do as firemen. There's a lot of, and then the other one is that, you know, we feel good about what we do. We help effect a rescue or help save somebody, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But when I come home, a lot of times, I want certainty and I want stability and I don't want any variety and I don't want any. And so there's that balance where I know that my wife is waiting for me to help provide her for some of those things. Cause she's been stuck in the house for 3 days since
I've
been
gone. Thing. She wants some variety. Take me on a date.
And I'm like, no, let's shut it down. I don't want to see a single person. I don't want to solve anybody's problems today, you know? And so that's been helpful to know that, hey, she needs those same things that I do and that I should get off the couch and figure it out.
Well, and I think that's discussing with each other and knowing each other's rhythms, right? She, the kids, they know that when you come back from that, there's going to be a transition. So that's where communication comes in. You have to communicate the rhythms. You see, because if we know what the need is, you know, that's the first thing. What are you both needing? You're needing more certainty to get back in, feel more grounded and rooted at home. And she may be able to give you that time. But after that time, you know what she needs. She needs some variety. She needs to know that she's significant and valued and that I love her. So I'm going to do some things for her. So it's just understanding each other's rhythm and what the needs are at the time and coming up with some recipes.
There's this old guy that I used to talk to. And he said, you know, men can go to the same restaurant. They want to sit in the same booth. They order the same sandwich and they have the same iced tea, and they can do that for the rest of their life.
Uh-huh.
And women, they don't. We already went to that restaurant. Why would you still sit there? Why don't we sit over there? And I'm like, I thought that put it pretty well. It's like, I think they need a little bit more variety.
Well, they may have variety in other ways, but, you know, they like that sandwich. They like that cup of coffee, and it's the same person that's serving them that makes them feel secure. I mean, certainty is about feeling secure in the world. I mean, let's face it. We live on a blueberry, and it's traveling at 1,100 miles an hour. And we have this conception that we're standing straight up and down, but we're probably leaning. Gravity's holding us there, right? And we're brilliant. We live in Southern California. We live on faults, right? Right? So we have this so much uncertainty, but what we really need is certainty. We need to feel secure.
So you heard it here first. Max says the earth is not flat.
We can't get into that here.
Why? Was that another episode you guys had?
No.
Well, you know, in this time, I think it's an interesting dynamic that there is so much more information and access to information than I think there was in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that could be a fault to men or people in general, because they can just watch a YouTube video, or they can just watch somebody do a breathing exercise, or they can just, and they kind of piecemeal their stuff. But what I've always found value in is actually having a personal coach or somebody to actually go, who's tangible, you can touch, or you can go on and actually check in, like person mm-hmm. to person. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you feel about that. It's just the access to so much information, even things like this podcast, if that's a good thing, a bad thing, or it's just what we're dealing with.
Well, I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I think we're going to edit a lot of this one, aren't we?
Why would we do that? There's that one awkward pause that was my fault. I think the thing that I immediately thought of, Kevin, when you said that, is actually what I just heard Jason talking about on that other podcast. What was the name of that podcast? We just talked about it. Grab Lives. But the method versus the idea or the principle behind the method. And I can watch a video and do Wim Hof breathing, for example, mm-hmm. and I can do that and it can be helpful. But if I don't really know why I'm doing it or what's the reason behind it, then I'm missing part of that. And I think maybe that's what you're getting at.
Yes.
And when I sit down with somebody like Max, you don't allow me, when I'm in here dealing with my stuff or doing life coach things, you don't allow me to stay on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
You go down and you say, okay, well, let's talk about why and why you're in the place that you're in now. Why have you been carrying all of your stuff and not communicating to your wife about it when you come home? They're like, hey, I need a moment. Instead, just trying to like, oh, I'm going to be strong enough to deal with this. Why are you doing that? And then mm-hmm. let's deal with that. Not simply just, well, you have to communicate, because that's part of it. But then explaining why, because at least for somebody like me, if I don't have the reasons behind it, I can execute. I can all day know that I have to communicate with my wife and I have to do, you know, I got to spend time in the Word and I got to breathe. But if I don't know the reasons behind that, I'm not going to be able to fully accomplish those goals, because I'm just kind of checking boxes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it doesn't go to the depth that we really, really want. You know, for instance, it's like the difference between the word intentional. So I have a lot of people that come in, the parents, for instance, they do a lot of intentional parenting. So you can be an intentional parent and discipline a certain kind of way. But what's more important is that, are you conscious? Because you can be intentional, use the same strategy, but it won't work with that child because you don't see that child. You're caught in a concept. You're caught in a strategy, but you're not really seeing really what you want. And that is, you love your kid. You really want to impact them and move them a certain way. So there's something that's greater than just being intentional. Are you conscious? Are you conscious of your wife and what she needs? Are you conscious of your kids, your coworkers, right? So there's a whole different level. And that's really what we want.
I'm picturing guys in the ice bath right now at the program, at the fire up program.
Okay.
And there are guys that get into that ice bath, and everybody struggles in the ice bath, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're a cold water guy.
Yes.
Everybody's struggling, but some of those guys need Kevin to be in their face and to be encouraging them and driving them on with his unbridled enthusiasm, which he's so good at.
Uh-huh.
But there's other guys that need me to just get down next to their ear and quietly say, you're not getting out of this ice bath. And that's almost all I say. Uh-huh. Because they're different. There's different motivators.
Yeah, and
there.
We kind of intuitively see which one means what.
100%.
And my method is, I tell people, don't resist. Right? So what's going to happen is you're going to go in the cold water and everything in you is going to try to resist it because you know you're going to suffer. We don't want to suffer. But our resistance is truly our suffering. The more you resist, the more you'll shudder, you know, the more you'll avoid it. It'll be very difficult. But if you just let yourself accept it, say, don't resist, move in. You get in, your body eventually acclimates very quickly.
I hear you talk about that all the time when you're putting new people in the ice bath. You talk about that moment where their head's down, they're inside, they're struggling, and then at some point, they look up.
Every time.
And open their eyes.
And once they look up, then they're aware and they're like conscious, like you say. Yes. And all of a sudden, they realize that there's 25 other people watching them sitting in this thing. And then now they know they can easily do one more minute and finish
the stopped test. Resisting.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's my whole thing. We talked about my morning routine in the last podcast. And part of my morning routine is getting up at a certain time, but I take a cold shower. I end my shower with a cold one.
Me too.
And part of that is I want to get ahead of the mind because the mind is the thing that's battling. That's the part of the resistance. If I can just be present, conscious without thinking, getting in that battle, you know, then I'm going to be fine. So, you know, part of that is it's training myself to get ahead of the mind. Because it wants to take off. It's going to go in the future and it wants to worry. Or if it goes in the past, it's going to want to be upset, sad, regretful. And I don't want that. I want to be present because there is no future and there is no past. They don't exist. The only thing that's real is now. Mm.
It's amazing how that is such a mental reset. You know, like for me, tend to run more on the depressive side, but I have to do things to get out of that. And usually it's getting in sunlight or a workout, but I know like immediately if I'm feeling kind of, however you explain that, if I take a cold shower or get an ice bath, it erases that. Yes. And I'm like, hey, what's happening? What do you guys want to do today? It's amazing how much of an immediate reset that is.
Yeah. It requires you to be present, right? It takes you out of the mind.
Mm.
So that's what happens with the body. It's a reset.
So I want to pivot for a second. Helped me kind of realize the duality and complexity of a guy, you know, that you said there's positive things of the ego. Like I think you've said, like that's, you have to have confidence. When Nolan and I work on the truck together, we're going onto a burning building and cutting a hole in the roof. You have to have some confidence. I think your ego drives that a little bit, but that's not always successful. Like having that same mindset at the home level. And I know that I think you've talked about that before, about having the literally almost like putting on a different hat when you go home, realizing that, hey, that might work here, but it won't work here.
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure the way I use ego is it's a false self. So I don't know that it's ever really, I mean, it's not the healthiest place we want to be. I think we would just want to be ourselves. So when we talk about ego, I think you can be yourself and have a sense of confidence. See, the ego is always, there's a sense that it's never enough. So if you go into a burning building and you do well, you're going to feel good. But what if the next thing you do, you don't do well? Then you have a diminished sense of self. We don't want that. We want you to just be yourself. So in yourself, you can have confidence. We don't need you to be false. But now you're speaking about the different hats we wear. I think you can be yourself. It's the same self when you're with the guys. You know, there's certain kind of ways you interact with people. And when you're home, it's going to be different. So I don't know that the self needs to change, but we just have different notes. Different notes when we're at home with our wives, with our kids. It might look differently than it is down at the fire station.
It better.
Yeah, it's pretty raw at the station. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. This might be a bit of a tougher one. We may have to edit this out. I say that in a lot of episodes and I never edit it out. So you should probably stop saying
it. Keep it.
All right. So I recently was off work for about 6 months. I was off on an injury. And when I came back, I found that I'm in a different area. I've moved stations, but I'm still close enough to my old area that I'm in my old area. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple of incidents that have kind of come back to me and started to bother me again. I don't want to call them flashbacks, but I don't know how else to describe it. Because I've had flashbacks. I know what that is. Yes. It's slightly different. But one call in particular involving a traffic accident. You were on this one, I think. Anyway.
Okay.
A couple of fatalities and one of the guys burns up. I'm not going to go into the details, but you were on that. Yeah. And so it's a call that's kind of come back to me. And it came back to me. We were actually on that same corner. There was a homeless gentleman that had a laceration from, I don't even know what. And we were there to take care of him, but we were on that corner. And so I'm looking at this intersection. It's daylight. We were there at 3 o'clock in the morning when it was real serious, but it's kind of come back to me. And then I found myself thinking about it a lot. What do you do in a moment like that? What do you recommend doing when some trauma from the past is kind of forcing its way back into your, into your consciousness? What do you think the proper way is to handle that?
Go into the storm.
Boom. Boom.
Now, I don't know if everybody, I mean, your listeners
have
probably
about it.
talked about it quite a bit, but it's, you see, what's happened is you have a memory trace that's that from the past that's coming into the present moment. And with that comes the emotions, the emotional experiences in your body. So that event isn't happening, but it's occurring as if it was happening in that moment again. So it's being triggered. So what I tell people is starve the thought, be aware. We know what it's pointing to. Thoughts are pointers. And let me ask you, Noel, so what emotion is it pointing to? What did you feel emotionally? Because your body is feeling something. What did you feel in that moment you remembered it?
Horror?
Horror, yes.
I don't really know the right word to use. We're going to be honest here. Not sorrow, not sadness. It's really a kind of an awful thing. We see enough death that I don't often feel sad for the people that we see perish. And a lot of times it's people that are elderly and, you know, it's natural causes. We're there for a heart attack or something, but it's natural causes. Yes. This case was not natural causes, but I think one of the ways that I was taught, and I don't even know if this is right, but one of the ways I was taught to deal with the stuff that we see on the job is just the idea that we didn't create the problem.
Yes.
We're just there to try to help solve it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a way that I've used to cope with some of the horrible things that we've seen is like, it's not my fault that this happened and I can do what I can do, what we're capable of as a team.
Yes.
And I can't do anything more than that. I'm not a miracle worker.
Right. You focus on what you have control of.
Yeah. So I think that one specifically is more just the reliving the horror of that moment, the hours that we spent extricating that body.
But in that moment, it's a feeling. You're feeling it. Your body is responding to it, right?
Maybe just not wanting to be there. I can remember that from that night, just not wanting to be in that situation.
It was painful.
But knowing that no one else was coming, it was up to us.
Yeah. There was no net. You guys had to do it.
Yeah. I can't tap out and say, hey, let the C shift handle this.
Yeah.
And you did
what you could. But I don't know if it's a feeling of helplessness.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's the atrocity, you know, it's just horrifying what you witnessed. And your body holds on to that. So what I would suggest is, it's just like for a moment, just don't think about what happened, but let yourself feel what you felt. Whatever you're feeling right now, I want you to feel it. And what it is allowing, as if we're standing on the edge of the ocean. And you know how when we sit there, we stand there, the waves come. They don't knock us over, but they move us. And the emotion, let the emotions come like the waves and stand, be present. That's into the storm, going into the storm of the emotion. That's how the experience becomes transmuted into something else. Because you can try to think about it differently, but you can't. I mean, there's all these different ways because really the mind is attempting not to feel. So I think especially guys where we think a lot about things and we try, really what we're doing is we're trying to think ourselves, if we think about it differently, then we won't have to feel. But the reality is in our body, we feel these things. You guys have a lot of feelings. You're dealing with a lot of traumatic things.
That is an interesting dynamic, though. You talk about when you're going from call to call to call to call to call. It doesn't seem, I don't think we tend to process those things, even when your day's off. But when, same thing, when I was injured and I was off for a number of months, I think that's when, boom, those things started coming back. I all of a sudden, you're sleeping well for the first time in a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden, you'd be getting up at night. And I was reliving some of those similar calls. But I think it's that you're like, you stop running from one to another that some of those other ones try to catch up to you. And I do think that that is huge because I don't know if you can talk about it, but I do know it's very natural for a lot of the guys to not feel and go into the storm.
Yes.
It's to numb by drinking something, smoking something, doing something else. And I think you're eventually going to have to deal with it at some point.
Yeah. Or just keeping really busy, right? You guys work, you take on extra shifts in between, you're doing, you know, you're ministering to guys, you're doing the podcast. You just stay really busy because you don't want to get into what's happening in the mind. Mm. You try to stay ahead of it, and it's unconscious, right? The mind isn't designed to bring us joy. It's designed to protect us. So it's doing what it's supposed to do. But unfortunately, eventually, we have to deal with it. Otherwise, it'll manifest in physical ways, right? Lots of problems. Maybe it could be even the cause of some injuries people get because they're maybe a little reckless or a little careless on the job, you know, because they're dealing with these emotions that they don't even know. Unfortunately, emotions are just something that we just have to contend with.
So I think at listening to you talk about it and thinking about it more, I think horror isn't the right word. I think I'm angry about it. I think I'm angry at that guy.
Yeah, he was going 100 miles an hour in a stolen car and killed somebody else, and then he burned alive in the car.
And then now we have to deal with that. So I think that might be it. Just like, how dare you type of thing.
Okay.
I think that's it too, because I fear when my children get in cars and go down similar roads, because I've seen that on that road at that intersection.
And there's nothing you can do.
And that's my family in there. So I'm like, I know that could be a possibility. And it is like an anger, fear type thing.
Well, you hit the fear. You know, we always talk about anger being a secondary emotion, really. Mm. And I learned this from a great philosopher. I think I've talked to you about this philosopher before. His name is Shrek. Most people know this guy, right?
I've heard of him.
Right. He says, ogres are like onions. We got layers, right? And what he's saying is, on the outside layer, I'm big, I'm angry, I'm an ogre. It protects me. That's the fruit. But we tear apart an onion. What happens when we tear apart an onion? We start to tear up. When we get to the root of it, it's anger on one level, but down here, it's really fear. Mm. It's really a sense of powerlessness. This could happen to any of us. Thank God it didn't happen to us or our kids, but it could happen to anyone.
That makes sense.
It's a great sense of being powerless.
Yeah, and I do think it's powerful when you're on roads, like you have to take that highway to get to your dad's house. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and those are the ones that... Those are the ones that sometimes when I've been in the further ends of our work, I don't think about them as much, but when they're the ones that we travel or the family goes down that road to get to the station or get to the, those are the ones that I think about vividly.
I've heard a lot of guys sit around the table and talk about not wanting to work where they live. And I've never had that problem because we live far away, but going back and working in 15's area, you know, for overtimes or just detailing or whatever, driving down those streets after not having been on them for, you know, 6-8 months, I can feel that. Like, I would not want to live in an area that I knew so well. I worked there for 10 years, know that area intimately. It doesn't matter where we go. I have memories on every street corner, every house. Well, not every house, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't want to live in an area where I was so aware of all the things that have gone wrong, because that's what we do. Right. We go to the things that have gone wrong. We don't go to the things that are, you know, going right. We don't show up at people's birthday parties and when the family's having a nice dinner together. We don't do that stuff.
That's right.
So it's all the negative and pain. All the, yeah.
It's pain.
I'll ask you this, Max. So I think no conspiracy. I mean, we've been on around 12 to 14 years on the job. And I think in the beginning, when you saw death, it was very shocking. And I didn't want to touch the body to confirm death or listen to the lung sounds. It was very awkward because I hadn't been exposed to that. We did it twice yesterday and it was no effect at me at all. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're accustomed to it. And I think in a good way, I think I've come to terms a lot more with death as just, it's natural. It's so natural. We just don't talk about it.
That's right.
And I just think that we do a bad job in society talking about death. I just see it. We see it very often. And so I think it's become more normal. Mm-hmm. I think these things happen. But where it hits me is like we had one where the couple was married 55 years and he had a sudden heart attack. And we did everything we could on scene for over 40 minutes trying to revive this gentleman. And he never did. And when we finally told the wife, who was distraught in the beginning, but there was hope because, you know, there's medicines and IVs and IOs and all these things happening. When there was no more hope and we called it, just the pure, just utter weeping, wailing that you can only hear from somebody who had just truly loved their husband of 55 years. That sound like haunts me. Like I hear that sound. Like I know that just ended that lady's world.
It's the end of a love story.
And to me, that was, I had no problem in the full arrest. I had no problem pronouncing. It's that weeping, that pure, that was the thing that bucked, that got me.
Yeah. You weren't no longer just a firefighter. You were a human being. Mm. It's beautiful. I mean, that's just part of the deal. You know, you are human beings at the end of the day, you know, you do what you do and you do it very, very well, but you're also human. You have emotions, you know, and you relate to it. You know what that's like, you know, with your wife, you know, that could be you. That could be you, Noel. So there's a personal aspect of everything that we do.
And it seems like as much as we would, I don't want to say like to not have that response, not go through that pain, what that actually would look like would be kind of horrifying. Like you'd have to be inhumane on some level to not be affected by that, you know, that story just related. I mean, I wasn't on that one, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been on others with you. Mm-hmm. You have to go through that. We have to experience that. Cause otherwise if we've gone that far, and I don't even know if that's possible, but I've seen some guys that appear to have gone that far. I don't know if they actually have, but then you're just going to be a shell. Like if you can't internalize and feel that and process that, how are you living your life outside of those experiences? I got to imagine you can't be.
Well, where people talk, you know, when I work with, you know, maybe it's like, you know, like police officers, in particular, you know, they have to pull up on a car. You know, they have to learn to compartmentalize a lot of things. They never know what they're going to go up against, right? They never know. And, you know, they will often talk about, well, I can compartmentalize. But then what we see is when you turn off the emotions, it's not easy to turn that back on. That they do their job very, very well, but then they take it home. And that's where it becomes a problem because they can't just turn it on and turn it off. So it can be a real problem. Yeah, because you have to be able to access that to be balanced. Again, what we're talking about is denial. We go through situations, we're all human. We're going to have emotional responses. You know, emotions are the body's response to thoughts. So if we're thinking certain things, even if we're denying certain things, even if it's unconscious, your body's going to have a reaction to it. So you can deny it all you want. You can resist it all you want. But eventually it's going to present itself. And that could be heart issues that I see with police officers or, you know, firefighters or people who've been in the military, right? Eventually it's going to show up somewhere in the body.
Hmm. Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic with that too, though, because I mean, you guys have had trauma or death in the family, and it seems to, like when my mom passed away, a lot of the interpersonal, like kind of family drama just erased. She died suddenly. And like my sisters and I have never been closer now. And I know, like, there's an, for things like that at work, sometimes there's initial like response to it. But then sometimes with some of those little things, like I see a couple like that, I want that in, I want that in our relationship with my wife. And so I think like some of the little things that I was nitty picky about, I'm like, it erases that. And I'm like, yes. I just want to be with her and I want to love her. I want to, you know what I mean? Like, so I think there could be good things if I recognize it and I go through the storm and say, what can I do? Because life is fleeting, right? We never know. We have no idea if we wake up tomorrow, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The other question I've been asking myself has been, what in 100 years, what is it that I'm dealing with that I would care about? 100 years from now, what, of all the things that I'm dealing with, what's important?
It's not the Instagram algorithm. Yeah, right. It's what do we care about, right? And like, who cares?
Right. I mean, the only thing that's gonna remain is love.
Mm.
That's a pretty small list.
Yeah. Did I love well?
Man, that's powerful. That hit me pretty hard right now.
Yeah, I'm carrying around a lot of stuff right now that I wouldn't care about in 100 years.
Right. It's true.
Well, that could be, that's, I've heard like the power of journaling. When I look back at some of my journals, I'm like, what am I thinking? This is what I was worried about. This is nonsense, right? Like, I think that's sometimes powerful to look. I don't know if you journal. I know Noel does, and I have sometimes too, but I use that 5-minute journal and it's real quick. But some of the things that I'll write down or worried about just seem ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
What are some of the more common things that you're seeing men come in for? Especially, I don't know if we can dial it down this accurately, but maybe guys that haven't really talked to somebody like you before in the past. What are some of the more common things that you're seeing? Maybe not necessarily in the first responder community, but just like men in general.
Well, in the first responder community, it's marriage issues.
Mm.
You know, it's just like we were talking about, you know, how can I be so good at my job, so well-respected, helping people, but when I go home, I don't feel respect. And their wives have a different version.
Do you think that's the ego, though? Because we wear this costume, we drive this war machine, people wave at us, we're welcomed into people's homes, and then you're not that when you go home. You're just another bozo.
Well, I don't know. Is it ego for you?
I think so. I mean, because if I'm honest, when I was in mortgage lending, I wasn't really proud of what I was doing. Mm. But there is something ego-driven, like for sure, that when I wear the uniform and I ride on that rig and I wave at children and they wave back to me, that does feed something. You know what I mean?
Sure, you're proud.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to totally derail this, but I have to.
Okay.
I have found myself working multiple days in a row. So I'll do like 4 or 5 in a row and then I'll be back home with the family and I'm tired and we're out at Stater Brothers getting groceries and I'll see a kid, you know, and kids look at you even if you're not in uniform and I'll like wave at the kid, be like, what's up, buddy? And then mom gives me this dirty look and the kid's like, what, dude? Are you talking to me? And then I realize I'm not in the uniform.
Oh.
Now I'm just a creepy guy in this
creepster
in the grocery store.
Can I tell a quick story about that?
Of course.
What'd you do?
So there was this park in the Palmdale, Lancaster, and it's a very tough area, right? And so okay. I was on duty up in that area and we would work out or PT in this park. And there was like a community center with like low income kids that would go out there and we would throw the ball with them and do all this stuff. And we were absolute heroes that all the people loved that we would throw the ball with these kids and we're interacting with firefighters and they were your great mentors and life, this and this. Well, one day we decided we get off at 8 a.m. Uh-huh. And we decide, hey, my buddy and I, we were just there yesterday. We're going to go back to the park and work out. But we're in normal fitness clothes. And we're hanging out to get the ball, start throwing it to the kids. And they come running over like, do not be near our children. They thought we were
a couple random dudes.
A couple guys trying to talk to some kids. And it was like, oh, wow. Like yesterday we were heroic. Today we could be in jail.
Well, maybe just don't change your clothes and go home.
But it is funny. I do think that is something to be cognizant of that. Like, I think when you're talking about marriage, that you're doing that at work and then you might not feel that respect that you get at home. Well, respect is kind of earned. I think you got to put that in at home.
Well, that too. But I think there's, there's different recipes for respect. So respect at the fire station is going to look different than respect is going to look at home. So you can't really demand the same recipe, right? So if you're a battalion chief, you're going to, you know, people are going to interact with you different, you know, when you're at work. But if you bring that home, you know, that just might not work, you know, where you come into a situation where your wife has, you know, been on watching four kids for, you know, 4 days because you did an extra shift, right? You know, you have to recognize her position. So it's just understanding the rhythm. Again, we're back to the rhythm, understanding the rhythm of each other. And it's seeing your spouse when you come home. Do you see her? Do you see what she needs? And does she see what you need? Mm-hmm. It's discussing that.
Will you tell us right now about couch time?
Couch time. Okay.
So now we're at home. Well, we're at home. Let's say we've done the duties for the day. The kids are down to bed. At least this is how we've tried to do it. Kids are down for bed, and there's a window of opportunity where it's just us.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about couch time.
Well, why don't you tell me about how you guys do couch time?
Well, we're probably going to fail miserably.
Okay.
Noel's encouraged me over the years, and we've had runs where we've done this okay. But
okay.
For me, it's really taking the phone away, the TV off. We sit on the couch. We look at each other, and then we pray in the beginning.
Okay.
And then that's super helpful. Mm-hmm. And then we pray for each other in the beginning. And usually in prayer, something comes up. My wife's like, I pray God that he is not as nitpicky on the dishes. Or there'll be something subtle will come out. But then I'll ask her, basically, how was her day? Is there anything I can do better? What can I do for you? Kind of a thing. And that's how we've been kind of doing. But I know there was more structure to it when we first started. Yes.
So let's see if Noel knows the structure.
Oh, he's going to do way better.
Okay.
I knew as soon as you brought this up, I knew he was just going to throw it back at us.
Yes.
And test us. So I'm right there with you. Couch time has been something that we've found immensely helpful, but for some reason, and this is on me, it's not something that we consistently do all the time. Like, it's super mm-hmm. helpful, and it's really a positive tool. And I tell other guys about it, like up at the program, I've talked about it before, mm-hmm. but it's not something I do all the time, and I need to do more often. So that having been said, we pray when we start out because, you know, that's what we believe. Mm-hmm. And then we do words of affirmation.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There you
so
go.
We're supposed to do words of affirmation.
That was mm-hmm. it.
And then highs and lows.
Yes.
That's it.
So what were your highs and lows during the day? That's mm-hmm. that's where sometimes it gets tough, but I feel like that's also where we both have an opportunity to say, hey, you know, you were nitpicking how I was doing the dishes and that made me feel like this. And then we can talk about it. And that might be something, at least for me, that I, you know, just allowed to annoy me and internalize. But now we got a chance to talk about it. And so we'll do that.
Okay.
And then I think I'm missing a step, but we always pray at the end as well.
Okay.
Those are the steps I remember. So I have it written down in my journal and I usually reference it when we sit down, but I don't have it here with me.
Okay. So I know not everybody, you know, has a faith, but I mean, maybe the first thing could be, you know, at least starting with words of affirmation. So I'll just go through the steps. The first step is pray together, right? Especially with faith, there's something. Martin Buber, he was a philosopher back in the early 1900s, and he wrote a book called The I-Thou. And the idea was that there's a union that's greater than two individuals coming together. There's something spiritual that bonds us together. We're both two individuals, but we're something greater. So it's acknowledging that there's something more than just my wife and myself. There's something spiritual that happens. So that's my prayer. The second thing is words of affirmation. And that could be really, really deep. Your eyes are like the pools of Shiloh, you know, or whatever. Or it could be just, I really appreciate the effort you put in making dinner. Right.
When we're doing this on a consistent basis, I have at times struggled with finding a word of affirmation that didn't have anything to do with Heather's physical beauty.
right.
Because that's my focus. Like, and I'm sitting there racking my brain because I know if I say one more thing about that, she's going to be like, really? Really? That's all?
I know what you're trying to do, buddy.
Right, right. Yeah, we know where you're going.
All right, so we got words of affirmation.
But you could also, you know, talk about just things you appreciate her character, about how great she is with the kids, or how she's out there with your son right now climbing rocks somewhere to get his energy out, just how much she loves the kids. So, you know, it's great if you can go a little deeper, but sometimes it's not going to be like that. It could just be an appreciation, affirmation, you know, it meant so much, that you took my dry cleaning, you know, for me. So it's just an acknowledgement. Remember, we're making deposits. The idea is to make deposits, because when the difficult conversation comes, you're going to take withdrawals, right? So we're making deposits. So the third thing is the high and the low. And that is, what was your high? What was your low? But the important thing is to begin to talk on an emotional level. Why was it a high? Well, this is, you know, when this happened, I felt this. Usually it's a feeling. So you're sharing a feeling, or this was my low. And why did it make you feel that way? Well, I felt sad, or I felt this. So you're sharing the emotions. Now, you brought up something. There's no crosstalk in this. That's for later on. So you're just sharing the high and the low. And the last thing could be, you know, what did God teach you today? Or maybe you go through.
That was it.
You know, it's kind of an interesting question, because when I bring it up, people say, well, I don't know. It's like, well, of course you don't, because you're not asking the question, right? And it's an awareness that he's always teaching us something. And sometimes it's the same lesson, patience, over and over and over, but that's okay. You know, we're just learning. Remember, one of the needs is to grow. So we're learning something. And then afterwards, you know, couples will, you know, maybe read a book. You know, Five Love Languages is a good book to go through, so you can zero in on, you know, how to love your spouse better.
They lie about that, though. You know, hers is like words of affirmation or something. Really, it's gifts. Let's be honest here. It's like I get the most response out of gifts. And she says it's something else, but it's not. It's gifts.
Well, sometimes they're actually the same, right? You know, it could be the same level. So it's words of affirmation while you're giving her a gift.
There it is. Right? That's it. The card.
That's a winner-winner chicken dinner, right? Right there.
One of the things I've found with couch time, and specifically with the words of affirmation, but then also like what's God teaching you, is that if I'm doing it consistently and it's something that we're actively doing, it makes me more aware, because I know that at the end of the day, I need an answer. And so I feel like I pay more attention. It's almost back to that book.
Being present.
Yeah. Being present. Mm-hmm. But it's almost back to that whole story-worthy idea.
Yes.
That guy that you just.
It was a great book.
We tell stories to communicate. If you haven't read this, you should read it.
Well, what's the book?
It's called Story Worthy. I don't remember the guy's name.
Okay.
We'll put the link in the show notes. We've recommended it before, but his whole thing is he tells stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we communicate things as humans. A lot of the time we tell each other stories. We're doing it constantly. And people will say, well, I don't have any stories. And his point is, if you take a moment every day to journal something that happened in your life, you're going to realize that more times than you're aware of, you've got things in your life that actually make great stories. We just don't pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like for me, this couch time is an opportunity to really start to notice, oh, you did this for me, or I did this and that was your low, and to maybe pay more attention, be more present, mm-hmm. more aware.
Yes.
So it's been beneficial. I'm feeling very convicted right now because I'm not currently doing couch time with Heather.
I wrote it down too. That's right.
So we're gonna start back up.
Couch time is just, it's a structure.
Right.
But, you know, we talked earlier in our podcast about what is the reason behind the rule? Why are we doing it in the first place? It's a happening. I'll use a 60s term, right? I'm 27 years old, but I'm going to use a 60s term.
Okay. Okay.
It's a happening. It's a time to get together. It's a time to connect. Right? That's the purpose. It's just, I'm just offering a structure because it's uncomfortable. You know, for couples to pray together is very uncomfortable because it's very intimate.
That's not unique to me and to my relationship with Heather.
No.
Okay. No.
All right, good. No. I kind of thought that was just me.
We went to, I'm going to get it out there. Let's get weird here for a second, but we went to this one Love After Marriage conference, which is through our church and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them suggested that you pray before you make love together.
Oh, yeah.
And invite that into your relationship. And I thought that was so bizarre because growing up, we didn't grow up with a faith. Like sex was dirty. It was a whole nother thing that you kept private. You know, that was, I had pornography involved. Like there was all that stuff. It wasn't involved with your wife.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting change in trying to do that. I can't tell you that was probably the most awkward I felt with my wife doing that before. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it was powerful at the same time. You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd probably ask, well, Lord, if you'd now excuse us, we're going to.
Well, I wanted to go into this total pivot after we did that. But
we're going everywhere.
What I'd like to be more of is consistent. And I find that, like we're talking about with couch time, we'll have runs of like, I'm doing great. And I have this program where I wake up and I take a cold shower and I get in sunlight into my eyes and I'll get a workout in the morning. And I don't know if, and it's natural that somehow within a very short period of time, let's say a month or something.
Okay.
One thing starts to get off the, or I had a bad night. We didn't sleep for 2 days and then I eat bad. And then this very cyclical thing where I'm completely off the program. And then it takes usually some, my wife saying you're just a complete terrorist right now or something's up to then having to go in to have a conversation and then slowly start getting into those habits, those positive things again. And are there strategies that you've used over your life? Because I know you do a lot of the same thing we do, to just be more consistent, or is it supposed to be a roller coaster of life?
Well, I think one thing I'd say is what's important is to be gentle. I mean, we all want certainty and consistency, but life isn't like that. It throws us a lot of variety. And I think life is there to help us grow. So it'll provide a lot of opportunities to stress us and we grow from it. So when it happens, I think especially men tend to be very, very critical of themselves for not following the schedule or getting out of a routine. Be gentle. And then just move yourself back to what you know works for you. Now, for me personally, that's why the morning is so important to me. You know, for me, win the morning, you win the day. That's why I get up at what time?
4?
5?
I remember it was early.
Well, I don't know if it's too early. I mean, you know, Jocko and those guys get up at like 3 o'clock.
Jocko
and
gets Wahlberg up too early.
Gets up at 2.
I'm saying it probably on the podcast.
That's nighttime.
Jocko gets up too early.
Yeah. Wahlberg, right? You know, no, I get up at 4:18.
I remember it was in the fours. Yeah.
Yeah. People ask me why 4:18. Why? What's the answer?
Why not?
4:15 is too early. 4:20 is too late. That's the real one. It really is the answer.
4:18.
Yeah.
That makes my like OCD thing. I go crazy. Like I need an even number. 4:20, 4:25, like 4, like
4:18. It's even though it's an even number, but it's not, that it's makes not the my five. Brain. But I mean, it's random. Yeah. It's just so random. But what's important is that every day, what I'm doing is I'm going outside 4:18. I look at the stars and I look at the space and I'm trying to connect really with God. I'm trying to get ahead of the mind because it's going to be that train that's going to try to come in and take over. That's the ego that tells me I'm not enough, not good enough, not rich enough, not all these things that the mind tells us, because that the ego is, to the ego, nothing is ever enough. I will never be enough. But to that eternal place, everything is abundant. So I try to get in a place where I begin my day living in a meditative state. I don't meditate. I try to live in a meditative state. And from that place, you know, I look up at the stars, the creation, and I feel God. And from that place, I feel peace. I feel joy. I feel love. And I move from there. And then I go in, my routine is I go and look in the mirror, I smile wide to set off a neuroassociation, because when you smile, the body knows happy thoughts. And then I think about what I'm grateful for, my wife, what I do, my kids, my grandkids. Oh, by the way, I have to. Hello, Hayden, Reagan, Bentley, JT, Olivia, and Papas.
Oh, that's
they
awesome.
Were mad last time that I didn't use their names. Those are my grandkids.
How many was that?
Six.
Six.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I very love it.
Cool. Yeah, the twins are going to be 11 next month. So it's just crazy.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so I had to. So
you're
I've
welcome.
I've done my due diligence. But I think about all the things that I'm grateful for, right? because I think we talked about it last time too. There's patterns of thought, you know, in any given day, you know, we have 60,000 thoughts. People that are anxious probably have more than that. We're always evaluating, but the mind will look at a couple things. One is, are you focused on what you're grateful for? Or are you focused on lack, loss, not enough? Are you focused on what you have control of, or is your mind focused on what you don't have control of? Is your mind in the past, present, future? Now, the mind goes all over the place, but there's patterns. If you focus on lack, loss, not enough, what you don't have control of, and that's the past, you're going to feel depressed. Right? So there's a pattern. You'll have regret and maybe even anger because there's nothing you can do about it. So if you focus on lack or fearing you're not going to have enough, things you don't have control of, and that's the future, you're going to live in perpetual anxiety.
Yeah, the future's fear, right? Yeah.
The future is fear, uncertainty. So the only place to have joy is to focus on what am I grateful? You know, the Bible talks about taking every thought captive, taking them prisoner. All that means is we get to direct our thoughts to what am I grateful for? What do I have control of? And being present. So I appreciate that the triggered event you had, Noel, where everything was pulled into the present moment and you had to contend with that emotion, right? But, you know, from that point on, I'm grateful this isn't happening now. What do I have control of right now? And being present. But being present is I'm feeling this stuff. You have to go in and through the storm in those moments. And then the emotion is gone. The life of an emotion, as you guys know, like we talked about this, what's the life of an emotion? 60 to 90 seconds. What keeps it going is we keep thinking about it. So the mind has an angry thought and our body responds to it with a feeling of anger, a fire in the belly. If we can cut off the thoughts and just be present with the feeling, within 60 to 90 seconds, it'll be gone. But people don't do that. They keep feeding it. I feel angry. Then I'm going to have more angry thoughts. That knucklehead pulled in front of me. He could have killed me. And then I'm more angry in my body. And it keeps going.
Yeah, I have that saying. I say it to myself all the time. Not today. Something like that will creep up, you know, whether it be, and I just, not today, not today. And it does go, it is less than 60 seconds, right?
It's amazing. I have people that come in and once I can get them to stop thinking and have the courage to feel, because all those thoughts are spinning and they just don't want to feel, but they're already feeling, they're suffering. I say, don't resist. Let's just go into those emotions. It's just a wave. It's just a wave. It's just a moment. Just tell yourself it's just a moment. It'll go away very quickly.
I resist this, but I hear you say a phrase like be gentle.
Yes.
And there's a part of me that doesn't want to have anything to do with that. I'm a man. I want to crush stuff.
Yes.
I'm usually walking around. You can ask my wife, angry, looking angry. Being,
we need to work on that.
Yeah, we do. So I hear a phrase like that and I'm like, I'm out. But I'm listening to Kevin talk about letting his routine go, kind of falling off the wagon. Mm-hmm. I'm literally coming out of a phase like that right now myself, where I wasn't doing any of the things that I knew I was supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. not doing daily devotions, not praying with Heather, not doing couch time, I was doing a little bit of fitness. That was about the only thing I was doing, but not eating right, all the things.
Yes.
My issue is I'll be on that road where I'm doing everything. I'm checking all the boxes and everything's great, right? And then I'll go to work and I have to be really careful about sugar. I've talked about it before on the podcast. I have a super addictive personality. I got a history of diabetes in my family. Mm. I default to being fat. And so I have to watch myself because I will, that cup of candy over there right now. Like if you offered me one piece and I was here by myself,
I'm going to remove it.
I would eat the entire cup of candy that you have there. And then I would go through your drawers to see if you had any more. But
by the way, I don't, that's all I have just to let you know.
Okay. Thank you. I was worried about that. But anyway, once I do that, then I'm just like, I failed. And then I start letting everything else go. And I start going down that road. I'm not being gentle and then saying, okay, all right, I had a donut or six with the guys at the station, and now I'm going to just go back onto my program, get back into it. I just like, I failed, it's done, it's over. And then I go down that road of continuing that failure, essentially.
So let me give you some disclosure. So the other day, I'm getting up in the morning and I didn't have my keys to my car. I didn't have my keys with me, but I locked myself in my garage.
Oh, yes. Good.
So, and everybody's asleep. I can't get a hold of anyone, right? Right. I get up at 4:18 in the morning, right? I'm like there. I'm going to the Ring doorbell. Just wake up. Somebody wake up. So I'm just sitting down there. And I think in the past years ago, I would have said, oh, the day is ruined.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So fortunately, I had my phone and I was able to contact someone and say, unfortunately, I can't be here. You know, I'm going to be a little late. And in the past, it was like, you know, I could, but you screw up, you know, that's what I mean by ego. I could identify with that negativity about myself. I'm less than because I did this, but he didn't. There was something in me that says, it's like, oh, it is what it is. And I can have a beautiful day and impact people, come to the office and do what I love to do. I didn't have to diminish myself because I forgot my keys.
That's so huge, because my stepdad, Leon, he's just a phenomenal human being, but so many people say, I have to go to the DMV today. It's going to be the worst day. They build it up, and then you sit in a line, and it's miserable and all that stuff. There's no thought like that. He'll go in a line, and you'll go in, and he'll come out with three best friends. Mm-hmm. Every time, no matter where we go to, but I think he just has this outlook to say, we're here, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm gonna get to know Max. And then that's it, it's incredible. But I don't default to that. I'm usually the one that said, oh, I'm looking forward to it on the calendar a week ahead, saying that's gonna be a terrible day. And you shouldn't do that, right?
One is, we've talked about it before too, is that when time is in the mind, like a week away. Anytime you think about time, you create stress. It just happens because now you're in the future, and there is no future. It doesn't exist, right? Because when you're at the DMV, it will be now. But when you're living in time, you create that kind of stress. So he has the ability to be present. Hmm. He's focused on what he has control of, right? He's grateful to be there. He has three new buddies. They're going to go have coffee in that one place where they always go to the same place, right? We talked about that early. He has certainty. And he's just present. That's why he has joy. Hmm. He doesn't go to the future and how horrible this is going to be. I mean, it's the Matrix, isn't it?
Yeah.
None of that exists. All that stuff in your mind doesn't exist. Thoughts are not real. Thoughts are pointers. They're just pointers to what we need, to what we feel.
That's all. So you've been married for how long now?
It's going to be 40 years.
40 years.
40 and 40.
Well, you started career and marriage at the same time. That's amazing. So I think similarly, like, you're dealing with some heavy, heavy stuff all day long. Yes. You're here late at night after a full day of dealing with heavy stuff, I can assume. And I think similarly in our profession, it's like, I want to hear the end of the day. So you won the day in the morning. You dealt with a whole lot of stuff. I can imagine if you feel like us sometimes, you don't want to deal with more problems at home. But how do you turn that hat around and say, your wife needs this, the grandkids need that, the house needs fixing? Or how do you deal into that couch time after dealing with a full day, if that makes sense?
Well, it's about staying present, though, isn't it? It's the same thing. I wake up in the morning and I'm at home and I'm just working on being present. I come to work and I'm with you guys right now at the end of a day, and I'm just being present. And I'll go home and whoever's awake, I'll just be present. It's a very simple formula. It's simple. It's just not easy. Mm-hmm. It takes training. But anyone can do this. You know, people ask me, you know, after seeing, you know, it could be 8 to 12 people in a day. You know, I mean, how do you walk away from that? Well, to be very honest, I don't think much about it after I leave. And it's not that I don't care for people. It's because when I was with them, I gave everything I could. I didn't hold anything back. If I would have, I would have had regrets. So I made sure everybody's okay. We have a plan. We have a strategy. and I was present. That's all I have control of. And I accept that. So I just go on to the next thing.
I got some work to do.
Yeah, because if you carry the people that you've talked to that day, or if you carry the calls that we went on during that day, what effect are you having on those things? Nothing, right? We're beyond that. That's now in the past. And you're saying the past doesn't exist. So I'm not really having any positive effect on that. I'm just simply negatively affecting myself.
Yeah, but you're, I think the thing that's a little different is that you still have emotions. So I'm dealing with my emotions all day long. You know, the central focus of my life is being present. Everything else is secondary because I want to be in a state of flow. Whether, you know, when I work with business people, it's about how do you flow, right? Everybody has those experiences where you do something and it's automatic.
Yeah.
Right? It just feels natural. We want to live in that state. And the only way to get there is to be out of the thoughts, out of the mind, as we've been discussing it, and find that. So that's the central focus of my day. So I tell myself, Max, if I'm not feeling that love, joy, and peace that I'm experiencing emotionally, I must be in my mind. Because, you know, if I have sadness, or I look for the emotion, it's just basically a kind of a gauge to know if I'm present or not. But I know if I'm not feeling peace, I must be in my mind. Where am I? Well, maybe I'm in the future. I don't have much past anymore. It doesn't go there. It's mostly future. And I'll have some kind of thought. And I say, okay, stop. What's it pointing to? Uncertainty. Then I allow myself to go into the storm. Feel the uncertainty. I'm at the wave. I'm at the ocean. Let it come. Breathe through, in and through the storm, just like the bison. I do that all day. Now, for you guys, you don't have the luxury of dealing with those emotions. You're in a critical situation. Yours is going to be delayed. But as soon as you're aware, be aware of the emotions, as soon as you're aware of them, go into the storm. Then you don't want to, as quick as you can, to not delay it. Let yourself go through it. You don't want to carry that around. You'll suffer. And I don't want you to suffer.
Makes sense. Well, one of the things I struggle with, maybe you can touch on this, is that let's say I'm gone for 3 days, which is very typical, and there'll be something that goes on at home. Like there's the toilet that breaks, and then when you get, you know, and then maybe you didn't get the workout that you wanted to do, or you didn't get some different little tasks going on, they kind of compile up, and then you have one day off or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I have this list of things. And, you know, I'm driving home. I got coffee on board. I come in hot and I just start going after the list. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. then I realize that I'm kind of pissing off the family, or maybe haven't been present or whatever it is, but I really haven't communicated to her the things that I have to get done. And then she's mad because you're like, how come you're not doing this instead? Like that kind of a thing.
That's right.
And so I don't know if you have any strategies for that to say like, hey, maybe you communicate with your wife what you need to get done, ask her what she needs to get done before or something like that, so that you're both kind of on the same page or something.
Well, you know what I find on, if there's days that I'm home, I find that I get in my wife's way.
That's a fact.
Right? Because she has a rhythm, right? So even when the kids were small, she was doing things and I would come in and, you know, lead her in the family or whatever I thought I was, but grand poobah or, you know, but, you know, I'm the general at work, you know, in my businesses, and I come at home and I can't do that. I have to, even if my role is the leader of a family, I have to find out and assess the rhythm of what's going on at home. So, and if I don't do that, then I'm going to push my way and it's going to get in the way of that rhythm. That's not good. It's not effective. So I think it's very necessary that you do that check-in. Now, with you guys, I mean, I have firefighters that are doing couch time, you know, on FaceTime.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some days are crazy busy and some days are like boring, right? Not in your station, maybe in Knowles now. But.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we had a gnarly shooting at your station the other
day. I wasn't there, though.
Uh-huh. But that is a thing, because I think I've had my wife come home and I'd be like, hey, how come we're doing this? Hey, why is this moved over here? Why are we doing this? And she'd sit and, hey, buddy, we were fine without you for 3 days. But that hits on the respect thing. Like, I'm Grand Poobah. What are you talking about? I'm supposed
to. Yabba-dabba-doo. It doesn't right? feel
and
like
then,
that.
Of course, and then we're battling, right? And so it's that whole love and respect thing. And I'm not, you know, I don't feel respected. So then she doesn't feel the love that I get. And so it's that whole thing. But I think it goes down to, yeah, go ahead.
Well, the rhythm. But, okay, so I don't know if we talked about this. Did we talk about the cry for help last time?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Let's do it again.
Do you guys know what the cry for help is?
If we did talk about it.
Okay, great principle. It's like this. So people, when you're interacting with people, interacting with your wife, interacting with a boss, anyone, there's one of two responses. They're either going to be loving to you or it's going to be a cry for help. So it's either loving or it's a
cry for help.
So you come home and your wife gives you this big hug. Oh, you're here. I love you. Here's your meal. Obviously loving. What if you go home and she's angry? It's not loving, so it's a
cry for help.
Cry for help.
Is that what it is? I'm usually like, what's wrong with you? Is it that time of the month?
Right. Yeah. So, but what happens is you identify with what she's saying, so you take it personal.
Mm.
So if you unhook, it's just a cry for help. So what if you come home and she's sad, withdrawn? It's not loving. It's a
cry for help.
Cry for help. What if she appears anxious? It's not loving. It's a
cry for help.
So if you begin to look at things, because what happens is you come home, you feel like the grand poobah because you were wearing a uniform and little kids are waving at you, but you walk in the house and you don't get the same greeting, right? You don't get the same fanfare. So, and then you take that personally. But it's, again, what's the rhythm? Being conscious. If she's not loving, it must be what?
A cry for help.
Don't personalize it. You lean in and say, you know, what's going on? How can I help?
I'm writing this down.
I remember this one example. It was a Saturday, and my wife was upset. She said something like, "No one helps." Mm-hmm. Now, my man mind just kicked off. It's like,
I got a list of things you do.
That I did.
Yeah.
I did all these things on the outside, the inside, you know, because my mind, you know, it's logical and I go to those details. But this is one of my good moments. Okay. I'm only going to share good moments. And that was, and I realized it was a cry for help. I said, "So what's going on?" And she goes, "Well, the kids are," and it was about the kids. It had nothing to do with me. She just needed help getting the kids to get motivated. So if I would have personalized that, my ego, right? So it points to the ego of significance. If I feel like she's saying I'm not significant, then I'm going to react. But if I look at it as a cry for help, then I'll respond. How can I help? Because we, the three of us, we like to help, right? It's what we do. So it's natural.
I just realized for the last 16 years of my marriage, I responded inaccurately to the cry for help.
I literally just did this tonight before we came down here. I did this. I didn't respond to it as a cry for help.
Tell us. What did you do?
Heather has been working really hard on this yearbook project for the kids' mountain fife and drum that they're in.
Yeah.
And she's really doing a great job, but it's really time consuming, last minute thing. And there's a lot of stress and drama around it. And before we got ready to come down here, she wasn't sure if she was going to come because she was still working on it. And she's trying to get input from me on whether or not she should ride along and come along. And I'm like, "You have to decide. You're the one with this project. I don't, you know, what do you want? Whatever you want to do is fine." And she made a comment and I took it personally and took it as an attack on myself. And I started giving her the list of all the things that proved that what she had just said was not right.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't helpful. Shockingly,
I thought you were going to give us a good moment. It was a bad one.
It didn't make her feel better. It didn't fix the problem. But you're right. I had taken it personally, and it wasn't personal. It was a cry for help. It was a good lesson.
It was a cry for help.
This is the thing about coming to Max, here. You know, we're here doing a podcast, so it's slightly different. But every time I talk to Max, he says something that I know that I've heard before, but that I have forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's like the light bulb comes back on. I'm like, oh man, I got to write that down again.
I'm realizing I don't have any tattoos, but if I did, I'd put cry for help on one arm.
Yes.
Or loving on the other. So I could be like, which one is it? You're going to just look at my arms because why do I need to remember this like that? I'm really reflecting that usually that is how it goes.
Yes.
It's always like, it's either a cry for help or loving. But I don't recognize a cry for help at all. I haven't, I'll just say. And so I usually take it personally.
Right? I've had people that have been married for over 20 years, and this is the one principle. They come in one time. I tell them this, and this is what transforms everything. So the wife is complaining, right? You know, you don't do this. And the guy thinks, oh no, she's saying I'm a POC. You know, that you're saying I'm insignificant, you're not respecting me. And I tell the guy, no, she's saying you're my person. I'm complaining because I want to talk to you. I want to connect to you because you're important to me. This is my cry for help. Help. And the guys go, you mean she really wants me to help? She really likes me? Yes, you're her person. That's what she's saying. The opposite of love is not hate. It is resignation. When she stops coming to you, that's when you got to really worry. Mm-hmm. This is a cry for help. And if you don't identify with it, because you're interpreting, right? The mind is making an interpretation of this, that she's saying that you're horrible. She's saying, no, you're my person. You're my man.
That's
so
funny.
We look at it like the cry for help.
We say that to the firemen because we have a funny culture, but if you're being made fun of, or you're getting jammed up, as we call it, it's actually a good thing. When there's resignation and nobody says anything to you and you're kind of ostracized, that's the real worry.
You're right? Done.
You're, right. That's the real worry, right?
Yeah.
So that's a great point. I mean, she's still there. That's it. But it's not the battle I think it is, right?
That's right. I mean, piss and vinegar, just as long as it's alive. But it's the recognition. And I think when you know who you are, when you get rooted in that, when you're present with who you are coming home, then you can recognize the rhythm. Is it loving, or does it require something else? And usually it's going to be a cry for help, but that's what you guys are good at. You like to help. You can do this. You just can't let it hook you. Because if you feel disrespected, you're going to react. Cry for help, you'll respond. That's what we want to be about.
I'm going to derail us again because this is the way my brain
so
works.
So we do, yeah.
And then I'm going to downshift. Have you ever seen the movie Memento?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it? This guy,
yeah,
Pierce?
Let me show you. I'm all inked up. Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you got to watch it. It's a fascinating idea of a movie, but he's got all these tattoos on his body, and they're like that. They're like reminders of things.
Really?
And I've always thought exactly the same thing, that like if I was going to get tattoos, it would be things like, because, you know, I love phrases and quotes and like creeds, and I want to collect them. And I've always thought if I ever got a tattoo, which at this point in my life, I'm 40, I never will, but that's exactly what I would do. So maybe we need to team up, you and me.
Cry for help. Let's get those temporary tats.
Yeah, we can do that. I've seen those in the mall. Yeah, they're doing that now. Well, I guess they've been doing that for a long time.
We get the six things across our knuckles.
Yeah.
I can't do it because I always figured if the CIA needs me, if I'm inked up, they can't use me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They might need me.
That's a really solid point.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to lean on that too. All right, so we're going to downshift.
Okay.
When we got on the phone to schedule this and to kind of finalize the plans, you started telling me a little bit about the fitness routine that you're doing now and this new piece of technology that you're using. So
technology.
Well, yeah. I'm going to call it technology.
Okay, it's technology.
It sounds like technology.
Science.
Yeah. So talk to me about that because I was fascinated and I want to know more.
Okay. So it all started when I was thinking about what do I want my life to look at 1 year from now, right? And if I continue to do the things that I'm doing now, it will mostly look exactly the same. But there's some areas in life where if we don't address them, it's going to be worse. You know, for instance, a muscle, right? If we exercise a muscle, it's going to get stronger. But what happens if we don't exercise a muscle?
It atrophies.
It doesn't stay the same, right? No, it atrophies. So I began to think, okay, so what do I need to do? So I just got dialed in, looking around, and I used to do some lifting and bodybuilding, you know, some decades ago. And I really like it. I really miss it. And I've got a busy schedule. So, you know, I found this plan, you know, and kind of dialing into, you know, meal prep, in terms of what am I going to do for, you know, the lifting routines, but I had some very specific goals. So I thought, what can I accomplish in 3 months? Right. This is what I want.
That's a great time frame. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I did it before, you know, in 3 months, I had this one guy go on this program, Body for Life. It was a best-selling book back in the 90s. And he lost in 75 pounds in 12 weeks. So it's very, very doable to do it. And eat well, never be hungry. So I just got back on one of those and taking some supplements. But you're talking about technology. I came across this. Let me see if I can pull it up right here.
Well, you're going to have to tell us what supplement you're taking too, because we're into all this stuff.
Subs.
Okay.
Can we ask how old you are?
I am 27.
27.
We're going to have to do math because he's not going to tell us. He's been in the practice for 40 years.
Yes.
Well, he looks great is what I'm saying. You can't see a picture of me. He looks fantastic.
So it's called the Eros, E-R-O-S scale.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool device. So, and what I was using calipers and, you know, they're just.
Calipers are terrible.
They're just terrible. Jesus. All they do is BMI.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm interested in.
And it's not
in.
Accurate.
Right. For anybody in the military that's yoked, your BMI, you wouldn't even be in the military.
You're
right?
Obese. We were just talking about this.
Your wife
that's
just,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I'm interested in, I want to get rid of fat and I want my six pack, right? I mean, that's what a guy wants. Hmm. So it's a useful tool because it breaks down, it measures subcutaneous fat, visceral fat, bone density, all these different things that are just, so I can watch the progress, you know, increase in muscle, all the things that I want to look at. So on the daily, I can look, and I don't do it every day, but every few days, I'll take a look at that and I can look at what my progress is. So it's a beautiful tool.
Are you like recording that anywhere where you're writing it down?
It actually is connected to an app.
It's got an app, so it does it for you.
Does it for me. Yeah, it's perfect.
There's a huge thing there. I haven't done this in a long time, but when you're trying to lose weight, I know this has been said 1,000 times before, but you should not weigh yourself every day.
Yeah.
Because there's fluctuations and you'll get depressed because one day you're going to stand on the scale, you're going to be 2 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
But that's a fluctuation. It's not accurate. So every few days is the way to do it.
Yeah. I like the 3 months because I've long told people, you know, you can do anything for 30 days, but really like the 3 month thing is a really cool thing to say, look back at a quarter and like look at quarterly where you're at. Mm-hmm. And I do think that every 3 months you can achieve quite a bit in that time frame. I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, there's the old saying, without a vision, the people perish. I mean, you know, you have to set a goal. Now, I don't know if this is where you want to go, but have you guys seen the new Arnold Netflix thing?
I haven't seen it. He's fascinating. Yeah.
I have watched the first part, which deals with his bodybuilding 6 times.
Oh, so the documentary, not the show. Okay.
The documentary.
It's incredible. If any one of those things would be a lifetime accomplishment, like being the Mr. Olympia 6-7 times.
Yeah.
That's a lifetime achievement. Or then the career in movies, right? I mean, unbelievable. Or the governor.
He was the governor of California.
It's unbelievable. Like that whole series is fantastic. Yeah.
Well, the beauty of it, the thing is he said that he had this ability to visualize. And, you know, what's interesting about it is the more clarity you can have with visualization, the more likely it's to happen. You remember, for instance, the body doesn't know the difference between a visualization and reality. So I think I've done this with you guys where I actually had you visualize working out or lifting some dumbbells without even moving. Did I do that with you guys before?
Not working out, but we visualize other peaceful things. Yes.
Yeah. But actually, there are studies done where I believe the study was that one group of people exercised, one group of people visualized exercising, and the other did nothing. So the group that did nothing, obviously, they didn't make any gains. The group that visualized or that did the exercise, they made a certain amount of gains. But what do you think happened to the people that visualized exercise?
They probably gained something.
There was a gain, a significant gain just from visualization because the body doesn't know the difference. So if we were to visualize right now and, you know, just lifting a 35-pound dumbbell, doing 10 reps, all of a sudden you'll start to feel, you'll get pumped just from the mind. So to visualize and have clear goals, that's why, you know, 90 days, it was very specific things I'm visualizing, very specific metrics that I'm looking for, trying to attain it. So it pulls.
I heard Tony Hawk talking about this recently, and it was probably an old interview, but he visualized a lot of his tricks and would believe that they were possible before anybody had ever done them. Mm-hmm. And then the cool thing too about after that, and you've seen this progression in all kinds of sports now, is that people are doing things that are just amazing, that were impossible, you know, 10, 20 years ago. But a lot of that happened because somebody visualized it, believed they could do it, then they did accomplish it. And then the people around them saw that, oh, that's possible. I watched Kevin do it. And so now I can do it too. Mm-hmm. So there is an amazing amount of power there with that visualization. It's pretty fascinating.
Well, in reality, most everything is done twice. First, it's a thought, and then it's an action. All things begin there. The problem is that people don't skillfully use their minds. Like we've talked about, people are caught up like rivers just of thoughts, these patterns of anxiety and depression. They're caught up in the rivers. They're being thought. They're not thinking. But from a place of presence, that's a place where you can skillfully think about what you want.
So what is the motivation? There's nothing, you're a little more seasoned than us. You have a successful practice. You have a successful marriage. You've got 6 grandkids. Is it that it makes you feel better mentally, physically? Do you want to look good for your wife still? What are the motivations that you got no more competitions, I'm assuming, or you're not nobody really to prove anything? You've been, what are the motivations to keep doing what you're doing right now?
I think when you climb any mountain, you begin to see the peaks of other mountains. It never, you know, in the human part, you know, we never stop trying. And it's not, I do it for myself, because as we talked about before, is, you know, to me, life is me versus me, just like it's you versus you and you versus you. It's not me versus other people. So I'm always trying to do something better, to grow, to learn, because I get excited. It's just fun. I want to have fun. So I find this fun, you know, to work out and get my, if you will, my ass to the gym when I don't want to, fighting through the mental things and becoming a better version of myself. That's my goal.
See, I love that, because we have a finite time in our career. Like, you have to retire by pretty much 60 years old is like the end of your career. You can't go further. And I think that a lot of guys can't wait to just sit in a chair and do nothing. And I think that's the death of us, right? Mm-hmm. And we go into convalescent hospitals all the time, and I think the person's 83 or 46. And the, you know what I mean? They have all these comorbidities and they've just kind of given up, and it's horrible to watch, but I'm always inspired to say, like, it doesn't seem like you have this vision of retirement where you're doing nothing. Like, you're working out, you got a 3-month program, you're doing, I mean, it's awesome, you know?
I have no desire. Because as long as I'm alive, you know, I say that the purpose in life is to find out what the gifts that God gave you, right? That's the purpose in life. The meaning in life is giving it away. As long as I have purpose and meaning in my life, why should I retire? If I can impact and make someone's life better and help ease their suffering, it's my joy. I feel like an instrument. I mean, honestly, I mean, I know that might sound blah, 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 but I do. I love to be used. It's not me. It doesn't feel like it's me. When you're in flow, you just do it. You know, I feel like God flows through me. I mean, that's my prayer when I look up at the stars in the morning. Love flow through me. And you know, I just try to be obedient to that. But in that, it's like, everything's just exciting.
You keep saying things that are so deep and awesome, and then my brain is over here thinking about burpees, and I just feel like such an ass because I have to say this about the burpees. but it's so pedestrian compared to what you're talking about.
Well, talk about burpees. What about burpees?
I'm just going to tell our listener out there right now who's heard you talk about visualization. Visualization.
That's it.
And the fact that you can get gains from that. Noel is not giving you permission to stop doing burpees just because you visualize them. You have to do the actual physical burpee. I'm saying that right now.
I knew that was coming.
All right?
All right.
I know that there's value in that and you have to do it, but you just like you said, you got to do it twice. You got to visualize it and then you have to physically do it. You're not getting out of burpees. So no, stop.
You have to execute. Yeah. Absolutely.
Max isn't giving you permission either.
No. Visualization is the inspiration, right? That it can be done. But then there's sweat. Right? You have to do it. That's the execution.
Yeah.
But a lot of times what we're dealing with is we're dealing with that conflict. You know, like the other day, it was a long day and I'm driving down Highway 79 towards the gym and my mind starts going, oh, you know, just like a little baby, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like a little victim baby of my ego.
I know the voice.
You know? Oh, you know it. So, oh, you've worked hard. You can go home and you can do some stuff at home because, you know, yeah. I'm never going to work out at home as hard as I am at the gym.
I think Jack in the Box is smoking, you know. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
you
yeah,
drive
yeah,
down
yeah,
that road yeah, too. Yeah, you got yeah. in and out, all these yeah, kind of places that are just yeah. calling my name. And so what I did is I was aware of what my mind was doing. And so I just got present. You know, what was the feeling? It was just, yes, it was fatigue and I just felt it. And let my mind do what it was going to do, but I just got present and it was really interesting. I just eased. Here I am driving in the parking lot of the gym and walked right in, did my workout, feel great. Because we never regret going.
No.
So never.
Do you do it in the evening? How's your time management with that? Because you are busy.
The hard part for me right now is finding the schedule. Weekends, you know, I can get there. I've got time. It depends. It depends during the week when I can get in. I'm not real regular. I'm trying to dial that in.
But you are doing it. You're scheduling it no matter, depending on your day.
I'm scheduling something.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the eating, the supplements, that's dialed in. You know, that's pretty consistent. But how I'm going to work out for that day, every day is a little different. So, but I was trying to think about, you know, do I do the 3 o'clock in the morning one where I just go first thing in the morning. I mean, there's benefits for that, you know, in terms of doing cardio and things like that early in the morning.
Some guys can't pull it off. I mean, I did say that Jocko gets up too early, but there are some guys that can do that. And there is a weird thing that appears to happen. I know you're only 27, but like my dad doesn't sleep nearly as much as I know that I need to at my age. He gets up super early and he functions great. And it seems like as you get older, there is more ability to sleep less. And I don't know if that's really true, but it does seem like I've seen that. What does your diet look like right now? And what are you, what supplements are you taking?
The SUPs.
Well, you know, mainly it's higher protein, carb cycling, you know, low carbs one day, 2 days, you know, about 150 grams, low days, about 50 grams. Protein, I'm trying to keep up over 200 grams of protein a day. Usually, you know, I like about 240, but if I can get around 200, I'm happy.
That's hard to do to get 240 in, yeah.
You know, that's where the protein comes in. I also do the blockchain of
BCAAs.
Yeah, I do those blockchain amino acids in the morning. So
any creatine or anything else?
I'm doing creatine right now.
You gotta
do
creatine.
I loaded. See, back in the day, I did creatine, didn't see much gains, but then I went on that AI chat B, whatever that thing is, the AI. It told me how to do it correctly.
ChatGPT.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So I went
on
there.
The ChatGPT.
So I go, how am I going to do this correctly? So it had me load up to like, is it grams 20, like 20, whatever it was. It had me load up for 2 weeks and then, you know, take it back down. So I've been doing that, you know, for a couple months now.
Solid.
Creatine is probably the thing that I can confidently recommend to almost anybody. Like that's a supplement that I don't actually know about women, but I know for men, especially as we get older, it's just, you should be taking it.
The data's behind it.
The data's behind it. There's more studies on that supplement than any other supplement in history. There aren't any negative side effects. It's really good for you mentally and then physically. It's not a magic drug. Like it's not going to turn you into that roided out looking guy that you see at the gym. Right. It's not going to do that for you, but it will give you some very positive benefits. So I can't say enough about that.
The one guy that I listen to quite a bit is Dr. Peter Attia, and he's really interested in and not really longevity, like in, but the, but your capability as you age. And he has this thing he calls the octogenarian Olympics. How do you say anybody in their 80s, he looks and he works backwards and say, if I'm in my 80s, what do I want to do? I want to be able to pick up my grandchild. I want to be able to carry two bags of groceries upstairs. I want to be able to do these functional things without a walker, without it. And so he works backwards. So he does, you know, kettlebell front squats, you know, like, and he does farmer carries and he does deadlifts. And it's really interesting because he's saying that if you look at most people, they start going away from weights in the 40s and then they start doing more cardio based things as they age. And then it ends up being walking. He's saying this is the absolute, should be the absolute opposite. He thinks is that as we atrophy and we lose testosterone, we lose those things, that we should be absolutely doing weight training.
Absolutely.
To remain fit, to be able to do functional things in your 80s, 90s.
And increases bone density, all of that. I mean, there's just so much about lifting weights, you know, and the body responds, you know, to the stress we put it under. That's the beauty of it. That, you know, even at my age of 27, which I'm a little older than that, you know, I find that my body is responding to that.
Do you think it keeps you mentally sharp as well, and mentally and or maybe emotionally stable? Because to me, I talk about it all the time. It gets the demon out of me. When I work out and I get a sweat on, I feel like some of that angst or whatever, I'm stressed or whatever, goes away. And then I'm able to be more present with my kids or be present with my wife.
Well, absolutely. And also we know what it produces in the brain, right? You know, the dopamine, all the different chemicals that get produced by exercising, right? You know, so you're getting, I mean, it's like a pharmacy is waking up in your brain and in your body, and it gets rid of a lot of, you know, the stress that you're experiencing in your body. I mean, you're releasing it. So blowing out your lymph system, right? By whatever you're doing, if you're doing some cardio, some high intensity interval training or something like that. So, I mean, it's good for that. But I think the other part that we haven't talked about is, I think it's important. We look at the mind and we look at the body as they're separate, and they're really not. We're psychosomatic entities, that if we have a healthy body, we're going to have a more healthy brain. Right? The things that we eat, for instance, you know, making sure you eat well is important, or breakfast. Why? You know, the gut health is become real popular, you know? So it's important, you know, getting the nutrients you need are essential for your brain, for neurotransmission, right? For instance, where do you think most of the serotonin in the body is created? Serotonin is that neurotransmitter that makes us feel good. Where do you think it's created? But most people would say it's in your brain, right? It's a neurotransmitter. Mm. No, it's created in the gut. Mm. It goes up the vagus nerve. Uh-huh. Right? So everything works together.
Yeah. You see some, we can go on quite a bit, a swath of people, but you see some people that might be morbidly obese and tend to have a lot of depressive, anxious things like that. And yes. I wonder if the prescription might not be an SSRI, but maybe some walking, you know, or something, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, one of the supplements I've been taking has been ashwagandha. I've been taking that for several months, and it's a supplement that is, there's some studies done that it reduces cortisol in the body, right? You guys, in what you do, you're always dealing with adrenal issues.
The stress hormone.
Stress hormone, that's right. So, and what happens is, I understand, is that when you're high in cortisol, you know, there's a hormone imbalance. Testosterone won't really even work well. But if you can lower cortisol, then testosterone can begin to function in the way that it's supposed to. So, and I understand that even if you were to give someone testosterone and there's high cortisol, it won't work. So by lowering stress, you know, lowers cortisol, allows more hormonal balance, which allows what? Weight loss. You get some guy that's under stress, depressed, anxious. The body's full of cortisol. It's saying fight, flight, danger, Will Robinson, right? It's saying, I need to hold on to this fat. I need to hold on to these reserves. I might need them. But get the guy calmer, right? Get the adrenal glands a little more balance, less cortisol, he's probably going to get better results.
Yeah, that's a big thing in our community, in the military community, is that they've seen a couple different studies that you would think that like special operations and firefighters and cops have these high testosterone levels, and usually they're terribly low. And it's usually because of that cortisol and sleep deprivation. Mm. And so it's prescribed like, you know, testosterone replacement quite a bit, but it's really those numbers just dramatically go up when they can get their cortisol levels down and they can get accurate sleep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've just been going on just tangents and going back and taking us down these roads that are stupid, but I'm going to post a link to the only commercial that I've ever seen that made me cry. And it's back to your point of the octogenarians and the, you know, trying to decide what you want to do in the future and being fit for that. Mm-hmm. It's a Christmas commercial, but you just got to go watch it. I'm going to tell you, you know what I'm talking about. If you've never seen it, go into the show notes, find this link, watch this video. And if you don't cry, you probably just shouldn't even be listening to this podcast anymore. We can't be friends.
Or so. I shouldn't be a counselor.
That's it. Yeah.
Go check it out.
But what inspires me is that she's got to be 85-year-old African-American bodybuilder in Rochester, New York.
Yes, she's a stud.
I mean, she started bodybuilding when she was in her 50s. She's amazing. Some guy tried to break in her house a couple of years ago. She picked up a table and threw it at him, right? I mean,
I want
that's what I want to be in my 80s.
Visualize.
And for me, like, you want to be not a detriment to the family or society. You want, like you were saying, useful and being available and being helpful. And I feel like I'm more useful and available and helpful when I'm myself capable, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. But capable also means not just physical.
Right.
Right.
Being
present.
Yeah. My default is to lean way too far into the being helpful in the physical realm, we'll say. Like that, I can focus on that 100% and just ignore everything else. And like, man, I got a good workout in. I'm good to go.
And we justify it because you have to have that for work.
You do.
Right. But at what point is the red line?
Who knows? Let me ask you guys something. When we talk about relationships, you talk about your marriages, what is the thing you fear most?
This has been the
this will be that opener question.
Oh man. Relationships, for me, I'm a child of multiple divorces. And so I feel like we're in uncharted territory. We've been married 16 years. And
congratulations.
And that's well more than all those relationships combined. Mm. And so I don't really know what it looks like to be married for 40 years. So sometimes I feel like when it's going down, that's it. All right. Half my stuff's gone. You go your way. And it feels like that's the, so I think it may be probably fear, right? Like we've invested so much and so much that I could go away, and I don't want that. You know what I mean?
Okay. So the mind goes to the what ifs. What if it falls apart? The fear of rejection, the fear of abandonment. Okay. Yeah. How about for you?
Mine's the same, but for slightly different reasons. You know, my parents are still together, and that was the example that I had. But with the loss of our sons and some of the things that we've gone through, Heather and I know that statistically we're more likely to be separated than we are to be together. And we still struggle and go through things like everybody does. And so when those things happen, when those moments happen, I do find myself being afraid of like, is this going to be it? Are we going to no longer be a family? And, you know, I don't want that, obviously.
Right.
So yeah, I think I would have the same fear, just the fear of, am I going to be rejected, or am I going to make a mistake that causes Heather to reject me?
Mm-hmm. And there's a loneliness, though, that you think about. There's that fear. Like if you're by yourself, no kids are grown and gone and done their own thing. And you're, you know, that there's a fear there, right? So
yes.
We've invested so much in each other. You know what I mean? That to lose that would be devastating personally.
Yeah. So what I would encourage you is that, so in those moments, there are these moments that you have with one another. Be aware of whether you lean in or lean out. Be aware of the fear. like we've talked about before, and don't resist. You know, we're into the storm kind of guys. We're not perfect at it, but we try, right? If something's difficult, that's what we want to move into because we know we're going to be better. But if we want to grow, we want to grow in love. So it's those moments, they're very important moments that when you feel a resistance to love and lean in and give it all because of the what ifs, I'm going to give you the how can. The how can is you do it. You lean in, you love boldly. Even if nothing comes back, you
do it. Without fear.
Well, you might feel fear, but do it anyways. Right? Courage is not the absence of fear.
Because like
it's feeling
said,
it, but doing it anyways.
Yes. And like you were saying, you would regret not leaning in and not giving
That's
it 100%. If you gave it your all and it didn't work out, well, you gave it your all, but you're right.
So in life, pain is inevitable. It's inevitable. But there's a greater pain, and that's the pain of regret. Right? We're going to feel pain, and we just have to deal with it gracefully. But regret is something that we have control of. You don't want to live with regrets. So the next time, and anyone that's listening to this, you have an opportunity to love, and there's something you feel yourself being pulling back. Lean in. Lean in. Go. Just love boldly. Even if nothing comes back, you'll have no regrets. I remember the last time I saw my dad. I was 15 years old when he died. He was hit by a drunk driver. He was mowing a lawn, and a drunk driver came up and hit him, and my sister was there when it happened.
Oh,
it was it was traumatic. And my dad was in the hospital, and apparently he was going to be paralyzed. And we didn't have that kind of close relationship like I have with my kids. I determined I was going to have a different kind of relationship. And I figured he'll come home. I can't really deal with this right now. I'm 15 years old. And so I didn't go see him in the hospital. And then he died. Blood clot. So I look back at situations like that. I don't want those regrets. But I didn't tell him that I loved him and how important he was to me at that age. Now, I've perfected it a lot more as the years have gone on. I was not very mature then, but when I do go to the past and pull it up, that's one thing I do think of. I don't want that regret. So that's my challenge to you guys.
Lean in.
I want that to be the last thing that people hear.
That was fantastic.
Keep going. Cause I don't, you can do whatever you want with this.
Before we end and do the little wrap and say how we can find you and all that stuff. This is just for personal reasons. I find I operate much better in the storm when it is stormy. It's the regular, monotonous day-to-day that I suck at.
Interesting.
Because I think for what we do, I don't know if that has to have some correlation, but like it's literally life or death 15 times a day, and we operate. And then things happen at the house. There's horrible tragedies, like grandma's dying, mom's dying. I'm like, we're operating. It's just the monotonous, like the day-to-day, just whatever. It's just useless.
Well, it's because, you know, you're used to that. You know, I mean, I think what's most difficult for anyone is to be able to sit. So let's just take a moment and let's just take a moment of silence. And we'll do this right now. We'll go about 10 seconds and everyone be aware of what you're experiencing inside. What are you feeling? So we'll start right now. Go ahead. Aware of? What do you feel? Peace? Dis-ease? So let me ask you guys, what'd you experience?
I'm in the future.
Okay, so anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you move there very quickly. Okay. Kevin, what was your experience?
Me, I feel like I have work to do in our relationship and on myself. That's what I like, sitting with you. I'm like, okay, it was a good wake-up call. Like, I got stuff to work on.
Okay, so you couldn't really sit. The mind got filled with thoughts.
No, meditation is not my strong suit, right?
But that's the thing is, no wonder you can't sit and be home. You know, you have to have a project. You have to get on to the next thing. That being still and being present is something that we train ourselves. And it's important. Because all those things in your mind, like we talked about before, 100 years from now, none of that's going to matter. And what will you neglect in the meantime? The things that we say we cherish. I sometimes do this exercise with people. I ask them, what do you value? And they'll make me a list of 10 things. And then I ask them, so let's take a look at your life. Where do you spend your time? Then it's all of a sudden, oh, what I value in my time. They don't line up. It's like, no wonder you feel dis-ease, right? Things aren't in alignment. And like any car that's not in alignment, it's going to drive off the road, right?
See, and I immediately go to, every time I get in my wife's car, her alignment's off and the gas is empty. So don't say alignment, because that gets...
Love boldly, love boldly.
I'm leaning in to take your car to the shop every time I get... No.
Max, this has been awesome. It's terrible that it's taken us 2 years to get back here, but thank you so much for your time. This has been hugely valuable for both of us, obviously, and I know that our listener will... deeply appreciate this conversation as well. We're going to put links to you and where to find you in the show notes, but just real quick, what's the easiest way to find you if someone's thinking that you might be a guy that they might want to talk to?
Well, I would just go on the internet. That's usually the way to do it. Max Gaze, New Hope Christian Counseling Center. You should be able to find me.
Actually, before I even put that in the episode, are you currently accepting new clients?
From time to time.
Okay.
From time to time.
Mention the Fire UK podcast.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Max, you're amazing. Love to hear it. And I want to see 3 months from now, I want to see those numbers.
Okay.
Let's go. This has been the Fire UK podcast.
Man. That was an awesome, awesome conversation to be a part of and to relive again as I do the production side of things. Huge thank you to Max. Thank you guys for listening. If you got something out of this episode, please share it with somebody that you think would enjoy it. We love the support you guys are giving us right now. We're seeing a lot of growth in the podcast, and that's super humbling and very encouraging. So share this episode with friends and family. We still need reviews on iTunes. We love that stuff. We love reading what you guys have to say about the podcast. So if you can do that for us, that would be awesome. And if you didn't go watch that YouTube video yet that I talked about toward the end of this episode, you need to go do it. Find it in the show notes. I just watched it again. And once again, I cried. You guys have got to watch this thing. And if you don't cry, we need to talk. We got to figure out either what's wrong with me or what's wrong with you. Thanks again. We'll see you next week. You gotta do it again.
Oh, this has been the Fire You Carry podcast.
I'm gonna call if you can edit that out.
Nope, not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it.
All right, I'll do it.
So,
all right, now we actually have to.
I gotta say, guys,
that was fantastic.
I think it was a mess.
Oh, no.
I didn't feel good about it. The last...
What?
Yeah.
Are we on?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, I am recording, but we haven't started.
We're always recording.
At times, I've found that river in your office to be super distracting. My brain wants to escape from what we're talking about, and so it starts to try to figure out where that video is looped and try to spot the loop.
Okay.
I've never been able
That would be you.
I've never been able to spot it. I'll start doing it. I'm like, what am I? That's not what I'm doing here.
Yeah, that one little ripple.
The one ripple that you see repeat.
Yeah, that's funny. Well.
Noel is not giving you permission to stop doing burpees just because you visualize them. You have to do the actual physical burpee. I'm saying that right now.